Ruth Berry is the Director of Electrical Engineering at BB7, a product development firm in Madison, Wisconsin. She has over 25 years of product development experience in the automotive, medical, dental, industrial controls, consumer, telecommunications, and wireless communications industries. She's worn myriad hats, including design engineer and project manager. According to Randy, she is well-versed in those middle-range projects, a blend of 50% known and 50% unknown.
I've worked on a really broad range of products, but some of them that are oftentimes the most interesting are the ones that come in the medical industry, where we're looking for a next-generation product that is some combination of cost reduction and new features. So we're looking at introducing or adding some additional technologies. And the interesting part of that is you need to look at the product through new eyes again, kind of from a systems perspective, to say which parts of this can I just inherit and bring forward, and where are my opportunities to actually look at bringing in new features and new technologies, and what does that mean? So you have to look at it from a risk management perspective and identify what sort of additional testing or factors you have to bring into the project plan.
It sounds like the scope is kind of what you're handed as being this blend, this one set of product plus these other features, and you begin to have to flex the rest of your planning around that.
That's very accurate. And sometimes that doesn't actually start as the scope statement. Pretty common for a client to come in and say, hey, I've got this product. There are a few things I'd like to modify about it from a reliability perspective, or some areas I would like to get some cost out of it. And as you start looking at that with the client, you identify some additional opportunities that if I'm opening the hood, there are some opportunities to take advantage of some new technologies in addition to looking at some cost reduction or some additional reliability features that you might be able to incorporate.
Let's just run the PMBOK for a second, some of the key areas. You mentioned risk. How do you see this changing, a more linear process in risk from a planning and an execution place?
So when we start with the initial planning phase where you're really looking at your requirements, looking at your project scope, we try to always look at starting up our risk management strategy, starting up looking at what our manufacturing strategy is going to be and what our testing strategy are going to be, all at that front end when we're doing that initial project planning. And when you start looking at the risks along with what features you're trying to incorporate, and a good example would be one of the products that we were looking at for one of our medical clients where they had basically a cable connecting a headlamp to a battery pack. And the cable was a bit of a problem. So they were looking for ways to manage the reliability of the cable. One of the ideas was, well, let's get rid of the cable. Why don't we put the batteries up by the headlamp and actually have the entire thing be a head-worn structure? And as soon as you start embracing an idea like that, one of the first things you need to look at is how does that affect the complexity and how does that affect the risk? And there were some additional very interesting risks that showed up. You know, what are the requirements around having a battery worn on the head?
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as you start playing with the trade-offs of how do I solve these problems or opportunities that I'm trying to address for a client, you really need to look at each of those alternative paths and kind of map it out to say, where does that take me, and does that still fit within the budget and the timeline and some of those traditional project management planning factors that we try to incorporate.
When you're actually going through the process then, how do you manage the risk? I mean, normally we look at the risk of being able to produce the project on time, on budget, but it's also adapting for the risk that's inherent in the product that you're having to then build around.
We really put together a risk management table that's very similar to one that you would see in a typical medical project, but we do them on all projects. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be looking at project risks and I'll call it user risks. So we would actually start mapping those right from the beginning to say, okay, here are the different areas that we're looking at that could introduce product reliability, product cost, and user safety considerations. Mm-hmm. And in a typical risk management process, you're going to map those about how severe they are and how likely they are to occur. And actually start, it's kind of informal, just using things like low, medium, high, not trying to mm-hmm. rank them with numbers right off. But trying to look at which of these things are factors that we need to weigh in right away. You may rule some out right away,
right,
because just looking at them may say, this is going to push me outside of my budget or my timeline. Hey, great idea. I'm going to keep track of this for a future generation of the product. But for today, you know, you'll end up with a subset of those ideas that, hey, these all kind of fit. Now let's look at those. And as a general rule, when we're planning a project, things that are higher risk, we will try to move those into the front end of the preliminary project design.
I wanted to ask you about that, because in a standard project management world, as you complete tasks, your risk tends to drop because you have more knowns now, right? The unknowns are coming off the table. You may have problems, but you know what they are. However, I remembered my folks at NASA describing, in some cases, the risk, in a sense, increasing, because now it becomes much more about the product and the product's uncertainty when you're doing R&D, when you're doing the new things. And so as they moved through the project, they were actually experiencing, in some cases, the potential for, you know, something catastrophically being wrong is actually higher in some way. So you were talking about moving it forward. Is that around the product design or around elements of the project execution?
I would say that it is, you are looking for where the unknowns or where the largest risk factors to the product are, to patient safety or user safety.
Mm.
I would draw an analogy to it that it's similar to when you're forming a project team. You always go through the forming, storming, norming, and performing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like creating the storming. So as project managers, we all know kind of how to do that. We deliberately drive a certain level of conflict to bring out the areas where our team needs to learn to work together. And in a product, you're doing something very similar. You're looking at that list of risks, and you're saying, which of these things do I actually not know how to solve? Or if I can't solve this, we can't even go down this path, because you want to find those things out. Fail fast is kind of the phrase that's frequently used in association with this. So it's akin to rapid prototyping. It kind of has a flavor of agile development to it, where I'm basically saying, hey, I've got a headlamp. I want to make it as small as possible, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to manage the thermal elements of dissipating the heat from this LED with the bezel, if I get the bezel this small, or if I want to use this really lightweight material for the bezel. And so you'll actually prototype just that part of it so that I can actually simulate that part of the problem and work through, okay, yes, I can use this really lightweight material that does dissipate the heat successfully, and now I've got a part of my design locked in place, and I can focus more on some of those more predictable elements like the electronics design for actually driving that LED headlamp.
When you're on the R&D side, you may have to invent your own tools or new things. It's like you open new questions of the research, new science questions. I'm imagining part of your risk is almost scope increase because you can't get to the product. Zeno's paradox. you keep almost getting there and then uncovering something else you have to resolve before you can actually get to the product as you thought you were told to build it.
Right. And at least the thing that I have found that, you know, my management teams become most comfortable with, if you're saying that you've got these risky areas and you can get past those in an early phase of a project, then the rest of your schedule becomes more predictable, both for timeline and for the cost to actually complete. And so you get into the realm where the management team or whoever is funding your project is more comfortable with the predictability of the outcome.
You've got a project that looks similar to a normal project, but you have all of this where you're moving your unknowns forward. You're uncovering new things even as you begin to try and resolve them. And that's part of the process. How does this change your communications with your own team and with external parties?
Certainly the team needs to understand. I mean, they're part of the helping to uncover the areas where things, it's not something that we've done before. It's not completely predictable. So they're really part of the identifying what those tasks are, as well as then tackling those tasks in a creative problem-solving approach. So they get to kind of be adventurers, and encouraging them that this is a good thing. We need to find these things and find an appropriate approach towards them. The part where communication with the team themselves, nobody likes to see a great product that they're working on not move forward. And yet, as a project manager in this kind of area of the project, you need to encourage them that that's exactly the right thing to do, because if this can't move forward the way it's currently defined, you need to figure that out right away.
So is the problem clearing a barrier to their understanding, or is it motivation, or is it fear?
I think it's more fear. None of us likes to see our baby be taken away from us. You know, one of the most rewarding things is to see a product that you've worked on actually on the shelves in the store, or see it, you know, online that you can actually purchase this. And so that's an exciting end goal that we all are already envisioning at the time that we view a concept and do that first project kickoff meeting. And so there is a little bit of encouraging the responsibility that, you know, you don't want to get too far down this path and then find out that this can't work, or it's going to be injured. It's not going to be able to meet its full specifications. You want to figure that out ahead of time, and then you can actually be delivering this healthy product to your end users and the marketplace that meets their expectations and they're excited about. So to the team, there's some coaching and encouraging that this is their responsibility as product developers and as being good stewards of the development funds that we've been given responsibility for.
Oh, I like that. That encouraging their responsibility with the idea, and you put this in your kickoff meeting, what it will feel like to see this healthy product actually being sold in the market.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's
and
exciting.
If it's a consumer product around here, we actually buy one for the people, and they actually get it in their office for products that, you know, as long as it's not like a, you know, $50,000 piece of equipment. But
my own MRI, yay.
Right, if they ever work on a Lamborghini, we're not giving them a Lamborghini, but, you know, But then you also mentioned how you manage stakeholders in the same way.
More than communicating with them, it's actually full-blown management of them, right?
It really is. The communication is really managing expectations.
Yeah.
So the best thing that we as a development team can be doing for our stakeholders is making sure that if there is something flawed about the product concept, that we identify that quickly before we spend much of the development funds. So it's kind of a race to find out how quickly can we identify if this is actually going to be a very successful, fully featured product, or how quickly can we identify if there are some flaws in that vision that need to be modified before we move forward.
That's different than a lot of the project management that I see here as I work with the federal government, or I hear others in my chapter talking about. The idea is that you get their understanding of the scope pretty nailed down. And even in an agile development, you're verifying, if you will, the scope as you move through it. You're really talking, again, this is that R&D, that research part, that development part, right? Where it's possible we're asking for something that can't be, or can't be easily in this way. And you're trying
right.
to figure that out quickly.
And we do a lot of product development where we're working. I would not say it's the bleeding edge of technology, but it is oftentimes the leading edge. You're trying to take a wireless system and force it into a very small consumer product or into a medical environment. And you have to be able to accomplish a particular communication range, a certain amount of data, and certain level of data security. And all of those things are things that you want to prove out very quickly. They may lead you to say that the product enclosure actually needs to be a little bit larger, or that, sorry, you can't have metal right here on the enclosure. We're going to have to go with an all-plastic enclosure, even though there may be some durability trade-offs with regard to that. Those are the sort of design trade-offs and discussion items that would have shown up in the risk register and that you'd want to get in front of the decision makers right up front.
How do you handle quality? Because it sounds like quality potentially has variables in it as well now.
Obviously, we stay very quality focused. We want something to be highly manufacturable. We look at manufacturability right up front when we start a design. And we have different aspects of product reliability defined, such as product life, as one of the design parameters that you're trying to meet with the design. But when your testing basically shows that maybe something is not going to be durable for 9 years of life, maybe the testing is actually showing that 7 is a better number. You want to have done enough product testing to actually have that known within the design team and the stakeholder community before you've ever communicated any sort of expectations to end users. And there's a decision point there at the point where you say, this is going to last 7 years, not 9 years, based on our reliability testing. What do we want to do? Do we want to go back and change the enclosure material or change the battery? Or do we want to proceed with the product for the 7-year product life?
How much value engineering goes into these to get to defining the product? And then when you just talked about, you know, you find out 7 years instead of 9. I mean, you want to design it for its purpose and for its life cycle, its expected lifespan. Do you guys use that technique at all, or is that used before you even get your hands around the project?
To a degree. I would say we're always balancing product cost, product development dollars, product development timeline, and what the product requirements are in kind of a trade-off balance as we work through a design. And so we're going to be running a costed bill of materials continuously through each of the different phases of the development cycle and looking at it to see if we're headed or trending the right direction. Probably keeping a continuous eye on where's 80% of the cost in this product coming from, so that we know if we're starting to trend the wrong direction, we can start to pull it back. At the same time, we're doing our preliminary testing against our performance against the required feature set. It's kind of a continuous dance, and you're going to make various decisions based on how your final stakeholder for a product actually prioritized those factors. So I guess it comes back to that's one of the first questions you need to ask right up front when you're doing your original system and project planning is if you have to prioritize these things for me, put them in order of priority: product cost, project costs, time to market, product reliability, or feature set.
I like that. You move past pure scope scheduling cost in the context of value of the project, the time to market. You're incorporating it more than just the standard three in a certain sense with that.
I think that's true, because I think we always have to stay sensitive to why are we working on this product.
Yep.
Somebody's business is dependent on this product being successful, and my stakeholders have probably staked a good portion of their career path planning on this product being successful.
That's one of the things we're hearing out of some of these podcasts, which is project managers need to think of themselves as investment managers. How much of this is systems engineering in your mind? This modeling, this simulation, this integration of the different pieces that need to change?
I would say systems engineering is a key way of thinking that has to stay in the forefront of your mind throughout. It doesn't ever go away.
And that's because of the research and development aspect of this, or the integration with the non-research and development aspect, or you're just suggesting that for all projects? What makes you want to highlight that?
I would highlight that because anytime I have ever seen somebody try to run right to the, shall we say, drawing board without taking a step back and thinking about where are my knowns, where are my unknowns, you know, what resources or building blocks are available to me, what constraints are around me, without understanding the business case and the drivers and the overall view of what you're trying to accomplish, you will end up with a substandard solution.
What's the biggest thing a project manager in your type of space with this blend of unknowns and a lot of variability, but also with a very practical and pragmatic output? What is it that you see project managers need to know the most?
I do believe that looking at the overall architecture, the overall system, the overall problem that you're trying to solve is a necessary starting point. Marrying that with a good risk management strategy, so you're now, as you start to dig down into the details, you're digging down with the mindset that I am trying to minimize risk. The other thing that I would say has increases success in these types of projects is to make sure that you delegate authority. You don't need to do this all yourself. Most of my job in project management is really removing obstacles and empowering people and basically being there to still try to maintain that overall management of the project and having people with the appropriate skill sets digging down into the specific areas or specific problems is incredibly valuable to an overall success rate.
What was one of the most recent products you worked on that was the most interesting where you applied all of this?
Well, one that we just finished up for a medical customer is a home healthcare device.
Huh.
For treating patients with COPD. And this was a project that actually took us about 2 years, but it involved every single one of the capabilities within our organization, from market research and industrial design through the electrical software, mechanical engineering, fluid dynamics, finite elements analysis, right into our prototype shop for building things up. And the team was heavily involved in the verification and validation of the product as well. But one of the big challenges of this that pushed it into the realm of what we're describing is that we were going from a unit that was normally used in a hospital environment where the person who was setting it up and using it was a trained clinician. And now we were bringing it into a home healthcare environment where it was more than likely an elderly person who needed to understand this whole user interface on a fairly complex device.
Okay, so remove your risks as much and as quickly as possible. If necessary, you may need to abandon a certain approach if it means not delivering a healthy product. Foster good stewardship on your team, stewardship for the funds that they've been given to complete the project, as well as stewardship of the vision of the stakeholders. And don't lose sight of the bigger picture.